First of all, I want to thank everyone who's here on the last panel of the last day. So I really appreciate you sticking around, learn a little bit about how we include student voices in IT governance. And of course, it's not just the people in the room today we're talking to, there is the online audience as well. So welcome everyone who is watching online, either in real time or in the future, watching from the recorded version. And before we get started, I want to just mention just one thing that we're going to actually, it's going to be a lesson learned, but it's a good place to start as well. One of the lessons we learned is thinking about the value of incorporating student voices in IT governance. And when I was thinking today, when Shannon and I were working today to come up with what we're going to talk about, we're thinking about what is the value of what we can say and what's the value of what you can give us. And I think that's an interesting place to start our discussion. And from our perspective, we can get a lot of value from your experience of incorporating student voices, what's worked for you, what hasn't worked, what have you tried, and how are you improving on that. And then from our what we can give you is we have two pretty different approaches to including student voices in IT governance. And we've tried in our own examples, we've tried a few different cases and have come up with ways that work for us. So we can give you a really varied perspective on incorporating student voices in IT governance. So before we start, I am Bill Wisser, and I'm from the Harvard Graduate School of Education. My primary role is instructional designer, where I work with faculty or their proxies, like teaching assistants, teaching fellows, et cetera, to help envision how technology can be used in the classroom. So this role that I'm speaking to today is a bit of a corollary to my main job. Okay.
My name is Shannon Rice, and I work for also Harvard University, but a different branch of it. I work for the IT department, mostly serving the college, the undergraduates, and the Graduate School of Arts and Sciences, which is a PhD granting branch.
Okay, so to frame our discussion today, we're not going to spend a lot of time on this because an entire conference could be around this idea, but what is the purpose of IT governance just in general? And where do we start thinking about IT governance? Why do we even care? And there's a couple ideas that are sort of popular in the field from the research about why is IT governance matter? Why is it important? What are our goals when we start to think about IT governance? And the last one here, I think, is what really helps me think about incorporating students into this. Students are a major stakeholder in higher education institutions. We sometimes forget that, right? We think about admins. We think about the administration. We think about the trustees. We think about the faculty, all very important parts. But the students matter too, right? So incorporating them into decision-making, into setting priorities, can really help frame our work and help make what we do more meaningful for their experience. Now, a couple of years ago, the EDUCAUSE Center for Applied Research put out this pretty impactful review called Process and Politics, IT Governance in Higher Ed. And they surveyed over, I think it was like 470 schools from across the spectrum of grad, undergrad, et cetera, public and private, about how they use IT governance. Did they have advisory boards, for example? What were they made up of? What were their goals? And two-thirds of the schools they surveyed indicated that they did have an advisory committee. And their roles were to set priorities, to set policy, and to adjudicate conflicts for the most part. And then there's also this idea that's a quote from the report, to build support for IT through inclusion. And again, focusing on that idea of inclusion, right? If we are thinking about governance as being hearing all the voices, then students are a part of that voice, or they should be, right? At least that's what our thoughts are. Now, interestingly, of those 66% who reported having an advisory committee, only half of them included students on that advisory committee. Right. Now, it's still a pretty good number, 50% of those reporting that they had a committee, but I think that there's room for improvement there. I think there's value to hearing from your students. Okay, so now let me set the stage for what I'm going to talk about. I am at the Graduate School of Education, like I mentioned. And I'm an instructional designer by trade, so I always go back when I think about setting up anything, I think about who my audience is, right? Audience really matters in this case. And it matters for a couple of reasons. particularly matters for a couple of reasons. At the Grad School of Education, we only work with graduate students. There are, I think, 13 master's programs and 2 doctoral programs, 800 or so master's students, another 200 or so doctoral students. And the important thing about that demographic makeup, from my perspective, is that the master's students, the majority of the students there, are only on campus for 1 year. It's a 9-month program, right? So there's no carryover into other years. There's no institutional memory being built amongst the students. They're gone, right? So it's very different from the experience that Shannon's going to talk about, where he's able to really build relationships and work with them to work on really long-term projects. We don't have that opportunity or that luxury. We only have them for 1 year. So what can we get from them? What can we give them in that 1 year? Now, another interesting aspect of demographics, that these are professional students. They have spent years working in the field already, and they're coming back to enhance their education with a graduate degree. Some of them have worked in higher ed for decades, and are coming back to then make that next step up to administration or to wherever they want to be. And many students come to us intentionally to take the technology and education program, the TIE program, which is a very popular, well-known program to incorporate technology into education. So they're coming with that to us with a lot of technology experience already. And that really informed how we set up our advisory committee with the students. So lessons learned from the past. For the last 2 years, we've had a committee called STAC, which is the Student Technology Advisory Committee. And the way this was designed was that it was all-inclusive. Now, the HGSC, the Graduate School of Education, in the technology area in which I work, there are several different groups. So I'm in the instructional technology group. There's also systems. There's app development. There's educational research programs. There's help desk. There's media services. That's all part of HGSC's technology infrastructure. So when we first had the STAC organization, there was a representative from each one of those groups, along with students, to get a perspective on their experience within the programs. So it ended up being, for the most part, a feedback forum. And we heard yesterday from the group from the University of Pennsylvania who were really focused on developing a powerful feedback mechanism among their students. So there is benefit to it, but there's also kind of limitations to that as well. If we're just hearing from them, and that's our only goal, is just feedback, how's it going for you, that can be pretty limiting on what we could do with that information. And perhaps as a result of that, it's difficult to maintain momentum. Right? There's only how many times can you complain about the learning management system, right? It gets dull after a while. You know, you're not going to keep coming and just keep giving us the same kind of feedback. So that we didn't have really a way to grab their attention throughout the entire year and make sure that they were still engaged with the work that we were doing. And then if our goal was to hear feedback from them, really the only thing we can do is try to resolve that feedback, try to resolve the issues that come up. Right? So it's really focused on resolving complaints. Right? Short-term issues that would come up, there were maybe a complaint about, well, the library closes too early on Sunday. Right? Great. Okay, we'll talk about that internally. We'll elevate it to the CIO. Facilities group, we'll talk about staffing, et cetera. I mean, that's as much as we can do with this type of setup that we had, right? There's value to that, but in some ways it's very limiting. So this year we turned it a little bit differently and we turned it into something called CTEC, right? So it's amazing change there, right? We use the word E, the letter E in there. And that E stands for educational. So instead of Student Technology Advisory Committee, now it's the Student Educational Technology Advisory Committee. And that was an important change. It really meant that we were focusing more on technology and education. And we were really trying to build on their expertise, their experience that they're bringing to us from their workplace or from their programs, from their coursework, whatever they're doing. Right? So kind of tap into that expertise and experience that they bring to us. And at the same time, give them an opportunity for some professional development. Remember, these are folks who are getting the master's degree in education for the most part, and many of them are using technology in their programs and also in their future. And they can see us as perhaps being a little bit of a mentorship role, providing instruction, providing direction, if they want to go into the field that we're in or any adjunct field related to that. So we're giving them an opportunity to explore new ideas, to new professional ideas. How do we engage with our communities? How do we engage with new ideas? And then this is where we are really benefiting from the students that we work with. What are they using in terms of educational technology? Some of these are applications that we support, and some of them aren't. A lot of them aren't. Right? How do you take notes? How do you collaborate with each other? How do you work on group projects? Right? It's really hard to capture that information in a survey. We don't even know what questions to ask. But when we get together and we kind of talk about, so here are some tools that we support, what do you use, what's the benefit of that, maybe we can come up with, we can meet middle ground somewhere and help you support what you're using. Right? And then at the same time, they are already emerging, they're researching emerging trends on their own as part of their coursework. And we're doing it as part of our job. And that's part of what I do. So now we can collaborate on that research and work together to see if there's any synergy between their experience and then our, what we bring to the table, issues of infrastructure and support and systems, et cetera. Right? And some of the examples of what's going on this year that the students are bringing to us, and we're also working with them on, many of the students in the group are interning at either edX or HarvardX as part of this MOOC explosion. There's 11 students on this advisory committee right now. Two of them are actually doing a field experience for credit in the HarvardX video production area, right? Because that's what they're interested in. It's part of their coursework. It's part of their future goals. And they're bringing that experience back to us, right? And then I'm framing it in the larger conversations of what's going on in edX, because I'm on a few committees that are involved with that, right? So again, we're working more as a partnership to understand these ideas. An example here of just emerging tool, MIT is working on this program called Nota Bene, which is a real-time annotation tool. Right? Just one example of this kind of homegrown product that's jumps up every once in a while. Another student on the advisory board is working on the development of this. So again, we get to hear what are the questions that you're asking, and how are you working on it, what is the results of it. And an example of a program that we support internally, Confluence, that we're rolling out now as part of our survey options, hearing from students about how they use it in their coursework, getting feedback from them on the ground as we're developing our support for the larger community. Right? So these are issues that are within the larger Harvard community or outside of Harvard or within our smaller community that students are already working on, whether we're involved or not. So let's kind of tap into that and redirect that to help us really meet our goals. Right? So the way that we designed it this year was very focused, was very specific, and it came with its own challenges that we'll talk about a little bit later. But we had a very directive way of kind of developing what we had tried to accomplish. The first one was the messaging. We had to be very clear up front about what we intended this committee to be. Time is very valuable to students. Again, they're only there for 1 year. Many of them are working. These are the vast majority of them are what you would call non-traditional age, late 20s up until the 50s, excuse me. So they really value their time outside of the classroom. We had to make our messaging clear that it's going to be kind of, this is exactly what we expect from you. If you want to work with us more, it'd be great. Here's the value you can get from it. Here's what we intend to do. We're going to meet 3 times, 90-minute sessions over the course of the year. And then each one of these sessions were broken down into kind of components. There was an opportunity for us to tell them a little bit about what we're working on. So, for example, I presented at an ERCOM SIG last fall on alternative credentialing, badging. So I was able to bring that back to them and talk to them about badging and what was the impact of badging to them. And then another segment of that 90 minutes was hearing from them in a feedback way, what's going on in your classes, what tools are you using, how can we support you better. And then the last segment was them working on a project, right, that they are researching, either part of the coursework or outside of the coursework, but within the context of this advisory committee, they're researching and they're bringing it back to us. Right? So we start out really broad, and then by the second meeting, which we already held, they're focusing on a particular tool or a suite of tools. And then by the third meeting that's scheduled in April, they'll present that research to us in some way. And then we'll have somewhat of a reception. And then the ongoing contact is a really important lesson that we learned. We're only meeting 3 times a year. It's easy to forget, you know, when the meeting is or who the participants are, but keeping in contact with them, using it, we use just an email listserv, very basic, that I share tips that come out, I share some resources, some web links, stuff that we're involved in a department context, right? So, for example, I'll share what we did here at NERCOM to them and some lessons I learned from other panels, just to keep them involved, make them feel part of the community, that we really believe that they are part of that community. Okay, so now I'm going to turn it over to Shannon, who's going to present a pretty different approach to incorporating student voices. You're stuck.
So thanks, Bill. Let me just get rewired here. Does that sound good? Okay, great. Thanks. So, so I'll give you kind of a contrasting experience. I work, as I mentioned earlier, for the Harvard University Information Technology Group. I'm a product manager, and primarily, I'm also have headed up a student feedback initiative. But our target was undergraduates and students in the Graduate School of Arts and Sciences. So it's two sets of constituencies that we serve. And let's see. So I work for HUIT. I'm a product manager. And actually, I'd like to just ask, how many of you have student advisory boards at your institution? I know Bill mentioned the 66% study. It looks about like 66% here. Two-thirds of the people just raised their hand. So I will be talking about kind of our strategy for that. And please think of questions at the end. We're going to make a point to leave time to have a little bit of discussion and sharing of experiences. Also, I'd like to commend you all for being here and sticking it out for the last presentation of the conference. You guys are hardcore, and that's awesome. And I'd also like to say hello to the people who are out there online. And I'd also like to encourage you to bring any questions at the end, because I think it would be cool to have a question from someone somewhere random. So that would be fun. So anyways, so I work for Harvard University. There's a 6,000-plus undergrads that we work with, and around 10,000 grad students, maybe a little less than that. But before the 2011-2012 year, before a year and a half ago, we did have a kind of more traditional student advisory group, which worked for what it was, but it didn't really attain all that we wanted. So I will tell you, I will just kind of outline what we did have, which was, we called it SAGET, which is Student Advisory Group for Educational Technology. So it was kind of, we're the academic technology group, so we focused on that at that time. It was generally a feedback forum. We would have things we wanted to present to students and get their feedback, which is rather common. It tended to be ad hoc in the sense that it met regularly, but the topics that we would bring up would be things that we wanted to hear about at that time, and there wasn't like a thread like of continued projects so much. It was useful for getting feedback on services, but it was not a driving decision-making force. And so that's where the kind of our topic is on student voice in governance. It was student voice in how are we doing and what do you like and what don't you like, but it wasn't really driving kind of the student perspective in decision-making, which, as Bill alluded to, is kind of, although we're a college and surrounded by students, it's I found often kind of, you know, surprising how little we know about what the student experience is like, so even of our own systems. So we did have this group, but at about a year and a half ago, in 2011, we had a big kind of reorganization of our IT department, and I was fortunate in that part of my job got kind of reconfigured, and I got to be kind of the student experience person without really a lot of clear understanding of what that was, which was great because it meant we were able to design something from scratch, which was exciting and still is. So going back to the last academic year, I'll kind of give you a little bit of an update of how we approached kind of re-envisioning our student advisory kind of process. So the first thing we did in the fall of 2011, so a little more than a year ago, is we wanted to kind of get a better understanding of what the students' experience with our systems was like. And we didn't know that there is the term service blueprinting at the time, but what we did was we took some of our student workers and we said, for the first 2 weeks of this semester, every time you use one of our IT systems, fill out this web form and let us know how it was. And we could kind of map what they did at the beginning of a semester. And it was rather fascinating to see it all together, because they go to some of like some of the IT groups, software, web applications to do some core searching, and then they go to another application run by, you know, the registrar's group, or a third application run by students that, like, students have built something that they can kind of do course comparisons on, and to see how they jumped around and get a better sense of how, in some ways, it was a somewhat kind of disjointed experience for them. And so that kind of was interesting for us and kind of gave us a broad sense of what they're doing. There is an interesting article on service blueprinting in the November EDUCAUSE magazine. So if you Google EDUCAUSE service blueprinting, it will pull it up. And I recommend that if you're interested in that. It's about the student experience and blueprinting it. So anyways, that was like our first step, just to kind of as a reality check, what are students using and how do they feel about it? And we met with students and just said, we want to kind of re-envision how we interact with students and build their voice. And we, you know, use those terms, build their voice into the process of decision making. And we kind of established this three kind of general tiers of strategy. One is kind of improve the process in terms of the organizations and the breakdown of the governance, you know, meeting with students, you know, twice a semester. So that's kind of first tier. Second one is we also have this goal of tapping into the technical talent of the students. We have an amazing pool of talented students who are building cool things all the time, and most of the time we are kind of not involved with that, and we'd like to kind of bring them in so that we can leverage their skills with our services. So we also have a goal to make our IT infrastructure more accessible to students, for example, by providing APIs that give them hooks into our data. So that's the second kind of tier. And then the third one is this general fuzzy goal, which is to remove those kind of cultural organizational barriers that keep us from collaborating and working together. And I think it's an important one to just lay it out there that this exists, because it comes up like just random things that, like, students, you know, are awake from 10 a.m. to 2 a.m., whereas staff are in the office at a different, I mean, just different things that you wouldn't think of necessarily at first could be barriers. So I think laying those three out there was a good way to kind of start the broad big picture. But that's not very concrete, so we decided what are the concrete strategies that we can implement. And one is a redesigned IT advisory board, which I'll talk about in more detail, because that's kind of the concrete piece of organization that plugs into the IT governance decision-making process, which is this student board. Then two, we established two new positions of paid student IT advisors. So these are students that we can bring in to, like, if we have a design meeting or we are planning a new UI, we can invite them and not feel like we're infringing on their time because they're paid. And so we bring them in and say, as a student, what do you think? So that we can avoid the situation where we conjecture as to what we think students will feel about our UI until we've built it and then find out that they find it problematic for something that we could have fixed earlier on if we knew about it. So, and those two students are on our board as well, just as a heads up, the makeup of the board. And then focus groups, we still have a need for focus groups, which is primarily what our previous version of the board was. And so we figured out how we can make these more effective, and just we've found from talking with students that we'd have better luck if we went to the college houses at night with pizza when we give that, we want their feedback. And that's actually turned out to be true. So that kind of is where we get our feedback on projects that come up. And I do have colleagues that will come up to me and say, hey, I need some student feedback on this thing we're going to build. And I'll say, oh, okay, great. Let's go to the house some evening and you can show it to them and you'll get good feedback. And that's worked well. Better than in the past where we've, in our traditional way, book a conference room at 1 o'clock in the afternoon on a Thursday and find it's hard to get people to come. And then the fourth one is actually a software. There's various software that will do this, but we use one called User Voice, which is a it's a web application where people can go in and give ideas online, and then other people can vote on them. And so it's a way to kind of crowdsource feedback on different ideas. And so we use that as a way to kind of get a base of ideas from students with some sense of what is popular. Because before that, we would just kind of guess, hey, we think students think this. Or, no, I think students think that. Whereas we can say, well, we have 87 votes on this and 27 on that. And it's at least some more quantitative sense of where the students are. But that brings us back to the student IT board. We use kind of the feedback that comes online and bring that to the student IT board. So the student IT advisory board is something we reimagined. It's three components that are critical to be there. One is the students, of course. There's three undergraduate students from the college, three graduate students representing the graduate students, plus the two kind of paid students that I mentioned before. So they give us a good kind of reality check of what we think or bring the new ideas themselves. And we recruited by reaching out to the student governments and found that they already know how to organize students and bring people together and interact with committees. So that was great because we didn't have to relearn all of that. The other piece that's key is the college administration. We didn't want this to be something where, we, the IT people and the students, come up with something cool, but then find out that there's some business reason why they like, for example, having, certain things paper-based, or there are certain policy decisions that we could easily go off the rails if they weren't involved. So we have representatives of the college and that's fairly high level, so we can have policy discussions when something comes up. Like, for example, releasing APIs, it's giving students hooks into our system. We couldn't just decide that on our own without, sign off from the dean. So they kind of help us get the kind of political backing for kind of innovative things that we want to do. And the board, because this is kind of part of our new reorganization, we're lucky to have executive level support, so that that helps us kind of do the counterpart of getting feedback, which is pushing an agenda based on what the students have, or at least bringing that to the table so that it can be evaluated with the other ideas that come in for IT improvements. Okay, so let's see. So that kind of gives you the overview. I'll talk about goals that we have for this year. One of the things that's important for keeping the enthusiasm level up of the students on the board is to demonstrate visible progress on projects. So we typically try to identify at least two projects that we're going to, that are rated as high priority by the students, and that we're going to commit to making progress, so that at the end of the year or before the end of the year, they can say to their peers, hey, we're the student IT board and we're on the student government and we worked with IT and brought your idea X and here's the results Y. And then they find that, talking about what Bill was saying, in terms of it can't just be a one-way street. They have to have something personal that they gain out of it. And so while ours isn't so much kind of professional development, it's more kind of what motivates student government representatives in general, which is being able to kind of make things happen for their peers. So a couple of the kind of flagship projects one, we had I'll talk about one in detail. We did a redesign contest of our student portal, and they kind of helped run that, and that came out with good results. We got a you know, for a $200 prize, we got a pretty awesome design from the students. And it was a fun exercise in kind of reaching out to the students and doing a collaborative project. I should also point out that our student IT board is not primarily educational technology. It spans all IT services. So another example of a project was students said they want emergency laptop loaner services so that when it's like crunch time at the end of the semester and their computer dies, they're not freaking out and stressed out. So that's another example of something that had been kind of on the agenda probably for a while, and it was like, well, they can get it from the library or there's other alternatives. But until they said, hey, this is one of our two things that we're asking for, I could then say, hey, can we do this? And it got traction much more easily than we would have been able to without the, you know, the board. So that's just kind of, if I were to say one thing that's helped keep momentum, it's just keeping in mind that the flip side to getting feedback is bringing back kind of results. And you're not going to be able to do everything, of course, but one or two things that can kind of show that you're making progress. So goals for this year, in addition to projects, just in general, we're working with the architecture group and the other groups to kind of make more data available via APIs, because that seems like if we can leverage student talent more, it will be really interesting, and it will kind of, our CTO calls it a force magnifier. You know, we have an army of talented developers out there. If we can find ways to harness the talent, then that will be good for our student IT experience. And then generally expand communication channels. I also went to the panel with you, Penn, and she talked about being a liaison. I kind of am now the person that people come to and say, hey, we have, you know, either from students or from the colleagues, but like students might come and say, hey, we have ideas about mobile, and then I can set up a meeting with the mobile people, or the colleagues might say, I have a project, what can students help me? And then I'll set up a meeting. So part of what I do is set up ad hoc meetings outside of the board and try to encourage more interaction with students. So that's just extending that, topic-based meetings, outreach to houses, et cetera. All right, so I think I'm doing fine on time. So I will talk a little bit about an example project that we did last year, which is the redesign of my.harvard, which is the student portal. And basically, we gave them a kind of a skeleton HTML of what the site is, and then they came up with the CSS designs. And we offered a $200 prize, and we got 12 very good and one stellar submissions. And that was interesting because, here I'll show you just a screenshot. Here's what it looked like before we did the contest, and then there's what it looked like after. It's a more visually kind of eye-grabbing site, and it got good reviews from the students who have to use it. And it was interesting that the winner was, you know, we were like thinking, well, maybe it'll be like a junior CS major. It was a first-year female student from Eastern Europe who is a government concentrator. So completely not any of the categories necessarily that I would have envisioned, but it was cool. Yeah, so we implemented that that was a good example because we had 12 submissions that come in. We, the board, picked the top three, and then we sent that out to all the students and said, hey, vote on your favorite, and sent them a link, and so they could choose their favorite. And then at the same time, we were able to sneak in a few survey questions about what kind of content they would like to see on my.harvard. And so we also got some feedback on how to kind of improve kind of the content as well as the look and feel. So I've kind of covered a lot. Here's some suggestions on what we've learned on how to attain goals. One is open up the channels, continue to listen. This is a screenshot of our website that I mentioned before where students can go in and give us ideas. Then I put, so in addition to listening, it's also important to respond, even when, as is most often the case, there's not a lot that you can do about it, just because simply educating them on why you can't do something or simply that you care about their point of view helps develop the goodwill. I think there had been kind of a cultural reluctance to go on record with bad news at our organization. And it's still there, but I think we're getting more used to it and finding that people don't like beat us over the heads all the time if we say that. It's kind of natural for IT to have to say that. And when you have a few things that are yes, that's why it's also important to have a few things like, hey, we're doing this, or the Student IT Advisory Board discussed this and we decided that of this and that, we're going to go with the project that was selected and we'll keep this on the backlog. So the other thing is just, I find it an exciting role to be in because I'm continually meeting new people and forging new relationships and trying to make connections so that other people are actually having conversations and things are moving in a positive direction and I quietly step backwards out of the picture. And there's a lot of more we could do. We're just kind of scratching the surface. I'm sure a lot of your organizations are doing interesting things and at this conference and talking with Bill and others. It's an exciting area because students are really sharp and can teach you a lot about your services. So it's exciting. All right, so with that, I will turn it back over to Bill and we'll kind of cover lessons that we've learned and then we'll encourage the Q&A discussion portion of the topic, so of the presentation.
So as Shannon said that we each have lessons here and we developed our advisory boards in sort of isolation from each other. But we didn't know that we were each, had this idea and we were working through it. So in the past years when we were each kind of flailing around, we could have benefited from talking to each other, which is another panel topic, how do your IT groups talk to each other. But for this one, when we did get together and talk about here's what we learned, we realized that we each had different lessons. And that's why we want to hear from you, too, about some of the lessons you learned. And one lesson I learned very early on was that time was so valuable to students. How are you going to keep them engaged over the duration of the year? So that's why we really came up with that project-based approach and really stressing that there was something that hope they would get out of it at the end of the year. In our case, it was more professional development. In Shannon's case, it was more like accomplishment, getting something done. But having something that's going to keep them engaged so that they will make the time for it. And then corollary to that, keep them engaged. Use reminders, use check-ins, set up some sort of contact, whether it's a listserv, whether it's an ongoing, whether it's a blog that everyone contributes to, whatever it is, but some way to keep them engaged over the duration of however long your process is. And then this question I started out with, what is the value? Right? Don't just create a student advisory panel just because we're telling you to, or hey, it's a good idea. There has to be a real reason for it. Why do you want to hear from students? What do you want students to get out of this process on their end? And then design your committee around those goals. Right? And then my last lesson learned is that there is no one size that fits all. And you heard that in our contrasting approaches to student advisory boards. I developed it in the way that I did for a particular reason, because of my constituency, because of the students I was working with, because of the strengths they bring, because of the challenges that they're, the fact that they're only here for 1 year. They really forced me to design the committee in a particular way, and Shannon designed his in a different way for different reasons. Right. So then Shannon has a few lessons of his own.
Continue. I'll use the arrows here. So just to follow up, and then we'll jump right into questions. Involve students in your design. So when we started, we brought in a couple students and said, here's what we want to do. And it was exciting to have them as part of the conversation, partly because we felt like, okay, we're actually already doing it. And they had the great ideas for, how to get the right people involved. And that may change over time. Like next year, as the board evolves, we may go in a different direction because of what the students say. But I would say if you're about to start something up, get some students in a room, and they'll give you a lot of good ideas and feedback. Working with student government was very helpful because they were just enthusiastic about it and already organized. And also, of course, resources are always a challenge. But align your, hopefully, if you're starting out on this, you have some time allocated for it. It'll be hard to do if it's just like you don't have time, but you think it's a good idea and you're going to try, but you, in the end, you might get, squeezed. But make sure you align both feedback with your response strategy. It's one thing to solicit feedback, but then also think through what you're going to do with the feedback and how you're going to kind of bring that to other groups, and think about your current IT governance structure and let them know that you're building a new channel for them and you'll be coming to their meetings with proposals. So with that, I think we can open it up for questions for those in the audience and those online.
And please use the microphone on the pedestal there so the viewers from home can participate.
Hey, thank you. This is a great presentation. My questions, I got two for Shannon. First, what do you have any other responsibilities other than sort of being the student sort of user experience person?
I do. I would say my job, right, I'm a product manager. Mm-hmm. So traditionally before this, I had been kind of managing IT web applications that are used by students. I have about now half of my time, so 0.5 FTE, that I can devote to this. And I would encourage, try to get the time blocked out. I know that the UPenn has two people devoted to it, so two FTEs, which I think is pretty neat.
And then the second question was related back to some of the API releases that you're doing to the students. What yep. sort of applications were you seeing them develop with that?
Okay, so there are a lot of computer science students already building things for use by other students, mm-hmm. and they have access to some course data, not a published API, but they have like XML files of course data. So they have built course tools
gotcha.
That do like searching. Sure. What we're building now is they have to go to our system to actually enroll and register for courses. Mm-hmm. And so we found that the use case is a lot of students use student-built tools to search for their courses. Then they write them down. Then they go into our system and they type them all in again and submit them. So our first kind of API project that we're underway with now that went through this vetting process of the student board is to give them an API to our course. We call it the course planner. But basically, it will allow student developers to, you know, to hook into our system and have a add to the official Harvard, you know, course system button, which will cut out that extra work and hopefully give them a like something to play around with in terms of like developing, and should be. So it's kind of experimental, yeah. but it's a first step.
It's pretty cool.
Oh, thanks.
My question is also for Shannon. Can you, or I guess both of you, but I'm mainly concerned with the undergrad side too. Mm-hmm. We're just down the street from you. Can you talk a bit more about the buy-in that you have at the higher level, both inside the IT organization and university-wide, if so? Because where I find is we're at almost exactly the same state you are and uh-huh. stagnating on the fact that we've done a lot of the low-hanging fruit and easy projects when it comes to someone saying, well, this entire computer lab needs to be redesigned, mm-hmm. that's hard.
So. Right, yeah. So we are lucky in that it's kind of a top-down initiative as well as a bottom-up initiative. And so our CIO has kind of outlined, like, you know, seven high-level goals, and one of them was involved students. So that's great because, you know, whenever I talk up until now, I forgot to mention it, but it's one of our seven high-level goals, and that helps kind of frame it as something that is supported by her. And I, on the board itself, we have two members of the senior leadership team, so the CTO and another high-level manager. So that's good. And when we have things that we need to bring to the college, they are aware of what we're doing. So there is kind of the high-level visibility. Also, it's hard, though, more at the middle level. There are people who have, you know, heavy workloads, and then I come, you know, come along and have some other new idea for them, and they don't quite know how to prioritize that. So having the kind of senior leadership team there is helpful. So I usually send, like, an update to the, you know, like a weekly update to each of the managing directors saying, the student initiative stuff related to your group is A, B, and C. And so that allows them to figure out how to prioritize it. Because I really have no idea. To me, it's all important, but I know that other groups have to fit it into their other priorities. So being able to, like, as a matter of routine, just send these weekly, very short bullet point updates just makes me feel comfortable that it's getting at least attention from the top. And when it comes to something like one of our two things rated high by students, I found that they've been very receptive to prioritizing it within their group. So depending on where you're at, that could be a useful strategy, is to work with the senior leadership team. And assuming they all buy into it, this idea, which I think most people do because it just seems to make sense, then you could suggest, well, I'd like to keep you up to date on the topics that come in, just because it's so easy for things to get lost in the shuffle, especially if you don't have built-in structure where students' feedback comes in.
So, but basically, with the CIO, you have buy-in at the corporation level.
We do, so, yeah. Okay. So.
I think there's just about 1 minute left if there's a question.
I've got a question about setting expectations. Mm-hmm. We're using a similar software to solicit ideas from the community, and it also has a voting capability. And unless you really frame that type of solicitation and voting properly, people think if it gets the most votes, it has to get done. But obviously, it's a much more complicated rubric when we mm-hmm. decide what gets done and when. One problem with the software that we're using, and I'm not sure if you have the same issue, is after an idea is put in and voted on, that's it. It doesn't really take the idea through the rest of the process, mm-hmm. which would be, you know, the analysis of it, the feasibility, is it scheduled, mm-hmm. And we run the risk of people feeling like, well, I put my idea in the box, and people voted on it, and then nothing happened. Mm-hmm. So I was curious if you have any thoughts about how to set expectations about what voting means, and then also how to communicate progress on things that are up there for everybody to see, but mm-hmm. not necessarily all being acted on.
Mm-hmm. Well, I just wanted to, I don't have the same feedback mechanism in place that Shannon does, so he'll speak specifically about that. But one thing I can mention is within our student advisory board, we instruct them on how we operate. So we bring them into the process. So if an idea comes up about a particular tool that they would say, oh, this is great, like Piazza, why can't we use Piazza discussion tool within our system, right? Well, then we'll go through the steps of exploring it. From my perspective as a designer, what's the impact on it in the classroom, to a technologist's experience, what's the user experience in this, what's the UI experience, to the systems person about how this would actually interact. So we do have that larger discussion to kind of walk them down the path. It doesn't address exactly what you're saying about having that visibly out there. We want this, but we're not doing it.
Yeah. And just the software that we have does have categories, so we could set it up like under technical assessment, under, you know, business assessment, and then rejected as a category. I mean, I think we have a nicer way of saying it, but basically, good idea, but we're not going to do it because of this. And then we close it out as completed. Although but that's hard to figure out. That's not easy what you're saying. We don't have it solved, but in terms of setting expectations, a good use of categories and kind of the challenge also is going back and like giving them the update. It's like, you know, here's an update. Since it's been a while, it's still in the queue, waiting for resources. We'll keep you posted. And the ones that you realize it's just never going to happen, just at some point bite the bullet and say, sorry, this is never going to happen. How does never work? No, but But the students generally respond well, I think, to the attempt to like just let them know, even when it's not the news they want to hear. And I've been surprised that, like, when we go to the board and say, yeah, we can't do that, in my mind, they're like going to have pitchforks and like try to like tar and feather us, but they're like, oh, okay, I guess that makes sense. So that's kind of good to see them face to face as well. I'm sure there's a lot of students, and we have a good representative of collaborative people.
Well, I think we're actually out of time. So again, we appreciate you spending your afternoon here on the last day, and also to the virtual viewers, and I hope this was helpful.
Thank you.